Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? It's Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from beautiful, sunny Southern California. Hope you're having a great day. It is National Burger Day. National Burger Day. I have a plan in place for how to speak about, in loving terms, your and my favorite burger. But I'll do so upcoming. You can also tweet us at Gottlieb Show. The Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we're going to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player help you stay into the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba, bum, bum,
bum, bum. Happy National Burger Day. Here's what I want you to do. All of us on the show will talk about our favorite burgers. What I do, I will not allow you to do is beseech the name of other burgers. I don't know how we've gotten to this part in our culture, right? Like, if you like Five Guys, somehow In-N-Out sucks. If you like Whataburger, how could you possibly like Wendy's? If you like Tommy's, that's West Coast chili on every sort of burger, you can't possibly like Fatburger. Okay? Why? Just tell me your favorite burger and why you love that burger. Specifically, go into intricate detail. There are very few cartoon characters I can relate to as much as I can relate to Wimpy. Because Wimpy loved hamburgers. And I love hamburgers. I also love tacos, but I love burgers. So do you guys all understand the premise here? I'm not saying you can't love your burger. I'm saying you don't need to go to negative town and tell me why some other burger stinks.
Well, you know, I love the Whopper, but the Whopper's so much better than the Big Mac.
Just, there's no need to be disrespectful. Speaking of disrespect, that's what Ezekiel Elliott felt was coming from the Cowboys camp, going back to last Saturday when Jerry Jones said, Zeke who? And, of course, Jerry, we played it for you yesterday. Jerry's like, I have earned the right. Write this down. I have earned the right. I have earned the right. Much like, you know, your grandpa's like, I have earned the right to be called Mr. Gottlieb, right? I have earned the right to joke about Ezekiel Elliott. So the latest in the Cowboys versus their running back saga is this. Ed Werder, he always has more. Ed Werder, who's back at the mothership, right? Ed Werder tweeted out that the latest contract offer between the Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott falls somewhere below that of Todd Gurley, above that of Le'Veon Bell. And they are at an impasse. Now, I'm guessing, and this is an educated guess, but still a guess, that the tweet came from sources within the Dallas Cowboys. Right? The tweet came from sources within the Dallas Cowboys because there is kind of an exact amount, not in terms of dollars, but we kind of get a sense it falls between the 13 and the 14. And it does paint the picture of Jerry Jones having reached his limit and he feeling disrespected. Matter of fact, I'm sure he feels like Ezekiel Elliott is, but one of the things that no one wants a child to be, no one wants an employee to be, no one wants a friend to be, no one wants a lover to be, no one wants anyone to be. Ungrateful. Ungrateful. Now, what happens in our PC culture is if I tweeted out that Ezekiel Elliott is ungrateful, I would get a response from the far left idiots of Twitter that would say, a typical white billionaire owner wants black football player to kiss his feet and take less than he demands and wants him to be grateful for the pennies he's spending him. But the true context of this is Jerry stood by all his guys. You go back and look, Michael Irvin stood by him. Even post-retirement and Deion Sanders playing for other teams, Deion Sanders stood by him. There have been players said negative things about Jerry, and Jerry has not come out and crushed them. Jerry stood by Romo during his first season, and by the way, rightfully so. They should have played Romo and not Dak in the playoffs. Jerry has stood by his guys through thick and through thin, through knucklehead and solid citizen. And for Ezekiel Elliott, in the context of this story, he built a system so that Zeke could be successful. And I'll grant you that it's not Jerry as the architect, but if we're going to give Jerry any credit, we should give him credit for fostering a system that has allowed the growth of his running backs. Nothing happens in the football or the business office, the Dallas Cowboys, without at least the express approval of Gerald Jones, INC. Additionally, when the commissioner wanted to take a season away from Ezekiel Elliott, he went to the mattresses. Jerry Jones did.
You gotta go to the mattresses.
Mattresses is a Godfather reference. If you don't know it, I feel really, really bad for you. You need to go watch The Godfather. It's not too dated a reference. He went to the mattresses. He tried to get Roger Goodell fired. It was a coup d'etat. That's what they tried to do. They tried to usurp the power. I love the word usurp. Usurp the power of the commissioner of the National Football League. Unsuccessfully. And of course, the retort from the commissioner was he got a contract extension. I like them apples, Jerry. Jerry Jones went to the mattresses for Ezekiel Elliott. And by the way, I'm sure he went back to the mattresses after the nonsense in Vegas that happened over the offseason as well. By the way, we're in a time of the Me Too movement. We're in a time where finally men have locked arms with women and said, enough of domestic violence. Keep your hands to yourself. If not, you can't play professional sports. He went against all political correctness, all culture, and stood by his guy. And now he offers him slightly less than what everyone deems to be a bad contract with Todd Gurley. And though it's at the same time that Todd Gurley got his deal done last year, it's also a year later after we've seen Todd Gurley not produce nearly at the level he should in the playoffs. Matter of fact, they found C.J. Anderson off the street. But he doesn't have to do this with Zeke. Zeke's under contract this year, under contract next year. We're not even getting into the franchise tag. This is not a Le'Veon Bell situation where Le'Veon Bell was a free agent. Nope. And so while Zeke let it out that he felt disrespected by a joke that everyone knew to be a joke about Tony Pollard making, allowing the Cowboys for at least a game to forget about the talents of Ezekiel Elliott. Jerry feels even worse than being disrespected. He feels like Ezekiel Elliott is ungrateful. Right? If there's things you want to teach your kids to be, teach them to be respectful. Teach them to be grateful. Like my greatest pride as a parent and my greatest pride as a coach. Last night, I had tryouts for my basketball program. I had 22 or so kids in one session. And I would say about 13 of them came up and said, thank you, coach. That's all you really want. That's all you really want. I gave up 2 hours of my time with my family. My three kids are still on vacation before summertime to work some kids out to continue to load up and help just teach basketball. I try not to lose money, but I don't make money out of the deal. And all you want is someone to be grateful. Jerry has taken the Dallas Cowboys, America's team, from the brink of bankruptcy to being the most valuable franchise in all of American sports. He's built a palace to both play in and another palace to practice in. He takes care of his guys on and off the football field during and after they play. And when they get into a kerfuffle, even with the commissioner of the National Football League, he has their back. And in an effort to paint the picture of what's really going on, he signed Jalen Smith to talk about the size of the pie. Not as much pie left. And now he lets us in on the fact that, look, we didn't offer him to be the top paid running back, but the second highest paid running back above that of Le'Veon Bell. And we don't actually even have to do this deal. And this guy hasn't shown up to work out. My guess is that Jerry Jones has gotten to the point where he feels like Ezekiel Elliott is ungrateful. And that is a hard thing to erase.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
There's a report out there from Adam Schefter, and it's really important that I want to point out, I've worked with Schefty. I know him personally. I think he's a good dude. And you have to understand that while his report is based upon quality sourcing, I will tell you, I will explain why I disagree with it in a moment. First, here's Adam Schefter.
You know, people forget that people have lives and they have families. And sometimes, you know, you want to do what's best for your wife or your kids. And Tom is 42 now. I'm sure that his family has sacrificed plenty for him to do what he's done and to be as dedicated as he is to his job, to do it at the level he has. So again, if it's me just looking at it from the outside, I'm just reading the signs, right? His home is for sale. He's on a contract that voids. It's just saying that this has the potential, one way or another, for this to be his last season in New England. It has the potential. I'm not telling you it will be. The elements are in place for it to be. But isn't that odd? All those things, like, doesn't that make you go, that's interesting?
That is what's called informed speculation from Adam Schefter on WEEI in Boston. Should be pointed out that Brady has previously addressed this on WEEI, in which he said there will be a time to which we can discuss this, time to pick. Now is not the time, right? But here's the thing. It's not that Tom Brady won't retire at the end of this season. But this would be one of the most off-brand decisions that he and, frankly, the Patriots have ever made. Right? What is the secret to the Patriots' success? There isn't one offense. The offense is morphed as they figured out, one, what they have, and two, what the defense has to match up with them. Last year, they became a power-running team. They didn't have great threats outside the numbers, especially after Josh Gordon was suspended. Gronk was not the same weapon as injuries deteriorated his ability to beat people. And Tom Brady isn't the same guy. So they drafted running back in the first round. They became a power-running team who occasionally would find a mismatch for Gronk, or they'd find a back out of the backfield to throw the football to. Right? That's who they became. There's not one style of defense that they played. Last year, well, that was before Patrick Chung got caught with booger sugar, last year they played three safeties more than any team in the National Football League. They evolved to a different defense. But it wasn't one defensive style. The secret to the Patriots is very complex and very simple at the same time. They will do whatever it takes to win this week. They are the ultimate pragmatists. The ultimate pragmatists. You know, if you need to run it, they will run it. If you need to throw it, they will throw it. If you need to play up-tempo, they will. Keep in mind, when they played the Chargers, they did something they hadn't done all season long. Do you know what that is? They took the opening kickoff. They took the opening kickoff. They marched down the field. They got a 7-0 lead. They're a team that makes a living on scoring late in the first half. No one flips a game better than the Patriots. And by flipping a game, it means they have the ball as time is running down the first half. They score, and then they get the ball back because they deferred when they won the kickoff. The first time they did it all year was in the second round of the playoffs, the divisional round of the playoffs, when the Chargers came to town. They chose to take the kickoff. They marched down the field. They scored 7. Then they got it. Then they got the ball back. Then they're up 14. Then they got the ball back. Then they're up 21. And the rest, as they say, is history. So if the working philosophy of the Patriots and the working philosophy of the offense and the working philosophy of Tom Brady is we don't have to worry about February when we're in August. We got to worry about August when we're August. And September, we're in September. And October, et cetera, et cetera. Only now they're going to make a predetermined decision as to how Tom Brady is going to feel at the end of this season? I don't buy it. Do I think it's weird that he's selling his house? Sure. Sure. I think it's weird that he's selling his house. Do I think it's a possibility that he could retire at the end of the year? Sure. But why would he do that? Why would he possibly do that, make that decision, and not have retired already? They just won the damn Super Bowl. What, the greed of going back for more? That greed should have been satisfied after they lost the previous year to the Philadelphia Eagles and they won last year against the LA Rams. That doesn't make any sense. My guess is that Tom Brady is getting the pull from Giselle to shut it down, and he's done that. He's gotten that for the last 5 years. My guess is that Tom Brady likes his life, likes his fame, likes the fact that he still has his faculties and can do other things outside of football. A man leading a team and winning a Super Bowl is in fact a drug. And while right now the idea might be get to a Super Bowl and win your 7th, which would put him ahead of Michael Jordan all time in the modern era for most championships, what happens if they don't win? They will cross that bridge when they get there, right? That's the ultimate in pragmatism. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. We'll discuss that when it's time. When we get to week 4, we'll talk about week 4. When we get to week 18, we'll talk about week 19. I mean, this would be, think about major corporations and the things that they do that have been off-brand. It's like when ESPN did the phone. I had the ESPN phone. Honestly, it was really cool. The problem is, the phone was super expensive for most people, and it was right before the iPhone launched. Right before the iPhone launched. When the iPhone launched, it was less expensive, more informative, and had it been the ESPN iPhone, had they partnered with somebody who did sell service, who made better phones, you'd still have it today. You would, but they went off brand. They tried to do it themselves. In 1982, Colgate's frozen meals failed to find a niche consumer. The conventional wisdom here was to hear people think Colgate, they think toothpaste, not frozen meals. They went off brand. They did. They went off brand. When Atlanta got a hockey team, how did that work? How has Phoenix's hockey team worked? Not great. You go off-brand, you run the risk of dealing with all sorts of unintended consequences you had no idea previously existed. And for the last essentially 20 years, the New England Patriots have operated in the, we'll worry about tomorrow. Let's win the day. Let's do our job. And just because he's selling his house, by the way, it doesn't mean that the house actually sells. It's a $49 million house. It is a sick house. And just because he might not want to live there again doesn't mean, one, they couldn't buy another place. Two, he couldn't have a place in Foxborough. You know, have a place close or have a place in Boston and live in New York. Might come down to where he wants to send his kids to school. What he wants to do post-career. But that doesn't mean that that career comes to an end. Doesn't mean it doesn't, but just putting together the tea leaves and saying that this decision has already been determined, that's a dangerous path to go down, because that's not how Tom Brady has ever rolled previously.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
All right, let's talk some Tom Brady. Guy knows what it's like to be a quarterback in the National Football League. Danny Cannell joins us from CBS Sports. He co-hosts Off the Bench with Rajah Bell. He's also involved in an online sports memorabilia auction that benefits St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Donate at stjudes.org/CBS Fantasy. You can check out the memorabilia up for auction at ebay.com/str/CBSFFT. That's a lot of slashes. We'll tweet it out because it's a lot to remember. Danny, Schefter came out today and was like, hey, look, not saying sources here, but I'm just putting two to two together. Brady's contract expires or voidable, and he's selling his house, and he's been doing it a long time. He's 42, and his wife probably wants him home. I think this is last year. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I mean, all those reasons you mentioned, it does seem to just make sense, right? But I also know Brady and his competitive spirit and how he wants to dominate everything he does would also love nothing more than to go off, ride off into the sunset with a Super Bowl, right? John Elway did it, Peyton Manning did it, you kind of hang it up, go off in the sunset. If he doesn't, if they come up short, or it's an uglier season than one would project, and yet he is still performing at a high level, then I wouldn't be surprised if he gave it one last hurrah and came back again. But yeah, if considering all those things, and if they were able to win again, which you know is very much a question mark, then I think you could say, all right, let's make that assumption. But if they lose, just knowing kind of what he brings to the table and his mindset, he doesn't want to go out with that taste in his mouth. He wants to go out with a win. So I think it depends on the way the season unfolds.
I completely agree with you. I think it's interesting. Yeah. If he wanted to go out with the Super Bowl, though, why didn't he go out at the end of last year's Super Bowl?
Maybe it was that 20. Maybe he wanted to get 20 years. I mean, there is something about that that's pretty cool. Maybe he feels like, I mean, remember how we were looking at this team in December thinking, oh, they're not that good. Maybe he thinks this year's team is better. You know, and he's like, hey, we won this year with a team that kind of scraped it together, didn't play that great, didn't have that many weapons, and all of a sudden I'm going to go out there and, you know, maybe Gronk's retiring, but maybe we're going to put some things on there that are better than Gronk, and we can figure things out. So I think maybe that's what enticed him to come back. But you, the one thing you did hit on there, if you watched his Tom versus Time on Facebook that he put out there, you know, the little documentary, Giselle definitely wants him to hang it up. He's
no
got
question.
That. But he's been able to get his way. So there is some pressure mounting on him, his contract, that, you know, it does look like it's closer to the end. But, again, it depends on how the season ends.
I agree with you. Patrick Chung caught with booger sugar. How much does this hurt the Patriots?
It'll hurt them. You got to see what happens as far as what the league does with, you know, penalties-wise there. I mean, there's something about Bill Belichick. There's just a trust. I mean, they didn't have Julian Edelman last year for four games at the beginning of the season. If they're without him, you know, they've been without him before for injury. Not the most alarming thing. And again, you got to remember the thing with the Patriots, any issues that they have, Brady getting older, look at their division. It's still, and this is when people talk about the Tom Brady is the GOAT discussion or the Patriots dynasty. There is, it's not an asterisk, but it should be, well, yeah, they did have a pretty easy road through their division for most of the last decade, which is kind of nuts when you think about it. This year, do you have any faith in Miami? Probably not. You can write them off. The Jets, yeah, we have high expectations for Sam Darnold, Adam Gase taking over. They built some weapons around them, but they're not. You still wouldn't pick them to win it. Bills, similar situation. Josh Allen, year two. You know, they've been getting better, but they're still not in the same class as the New England Patriots. So even if the Patriots have deficiencies and they still have to kind of figure things out in the regular season, you just kind of trust Brady and Belichick to get it done somehow. And even if they're 9-7, that's probably still enough to win their division, which is all they need. Then once they get a spot at the table in the playoffs, anything goes, and that's all they want is a chance.
Danny Cannell joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. The new report from Ed Werder is that the Cowboys offered to make Ezekiel Elliott the second highest paid running back in the National Football League. My guess is that report comes out, it's coming from the Cowboys. Line drawn in the sand. What do you make of the report and what it actually means?
So you have to consider the source. Love Ed Werder. He's been in the Dallas area for a long, long time. He's a reliable source. I trust him. I do think the Cowboys gave him that information to put more pressure on Zeke. But as far as the actual numbers, I'm very curious to know, yeah, well, it might look like it on paper that he's going to be the second highest running back, but where is the real money? What is the real money going to be? And that one, I do think it'll probably be backloaded. There will probably be some contingencies there for Zeke if he gets into trouble. They'd be foolish if they didn't, considering some of his issues that he's had off the field. But again, what is the real money? And the Cowboys are playing this out very publicly. You know, the way Jerry's been talking, Stephen Jones has been talking, they've been floating out these things, different reports. The first, it was top five paid running back. All of it is to make it look like we're doing everything we can to get Zeke in here, which is making Zeke look greedy. You know, the first time it was top five, why wouldn't he take that? But yet, if you look at the top five running backs, most people looked at it and said, well, there's a significant drop-off between the top three and then the next two. Now bumping it up another level does put some pressure back in Zeke's camp. But, again, is it real money or is it fake? Because unlike the Major League Baseball, NBA, the only thing you can rely on is the guaranteed money in the contract, the signing bonus or whatever else they might have structured in there. Every single contract, there's inflated money on the back end that makes it look good at that opening press conference for the agent. He looks like he gets a win. But look at the real numbers, and that's what I'm more curious than the second paid, you know, running back in the league.
No, I tend very much to agree with you. But I also think that there was a reason they did the Jalen Smith deal first. There was a reason that he said there's less pie to go around. Like, you know, in the context of all of these different things, it's not like other deals. The running back is a position of declining value. He's still under contract. They've gone to the mattresses for him, even with the commissioner. And they do have to pay several other young players. And his only leverage is, hey, I'm your way to get to a Super Bowl, but they're his only way to get paid. So that, do you think this is a last and final offer?
No, I don't. I think this will get done ultimately. I think there will be compromises made on both sides, and the Cowboys will probably pay a little bit more than they wanted to. But I don't think Zeke is going to max out as much as he thinks either. And again, as far as the public, Jerry Jones is a savvy, shrewd businessman. That's why he's a billionaire. That's why he's the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. These are chess moves that he's making in the media to play a certain narrative. And the thing that I do appreciate him playing, I do believe this, he is trying to get Zeke and Dak and Amari Cooper, who we haven't even really talked about, he's trying to get them to buy into the team mentality. Hey, sacrifice a little bit so that we can be a better team. And that is a genius move because it plays well publicly and it makes players look selfish. And I'm always pro player, but there is a mentality in nowadays, and a lot of it does come from the player's agents. You have to maximize when you have the opportunity. You have to get what you can get. Screw the team, screw anybody else. You have to get yours. I do think, as far as the guys we're talking about, I think Dak Prescott would take that. I think he would buy into it. Yep, you know what? I'm going to take a sacrifice. I'm still going to get a really nice payday. Maybe not the $40 million that's been floated out there, but I do think $30 million is probably a realistic expectation. It's a market value. Zeke is the one that I just don't know. I don't know if he's ready to say, yeah, I'll sacrifice. Sure, sign me up for that. He does, and his agent, I do think, is probably in his ear saying, you can max it out. You can take this thing to the next level. But all of this is just posturing until we get to week one, which is still a couple weeks away. Then you're going to see the stress levels amp. And I think it'll be more likely on the Cowboys side than it would be on Zeke's side. Even though he does have 2 years left, he doesn't have much leverage, I do think Jerry, in the back of his mind, does know what Zeke means to that team.
Yeah, but they play the Redskins, the Giants, and the Dolphins, right?
I love it. Yeah, and if he really wants to ride it and say, hey, let's put the pressure on Zeke, let's show him what we can do without him, good, then do that. But, and we do this in the media all the time, how many times do we sit here in the off season and you look at everybody's schedule and you say, chalk it up for a win, right? And the Cowboys should be favored in those first three games with or without Zeke. But what happens? Just what happens if the Giants come in and Eli captures some magic and the Giants come in and their defense looks a little bit better and they're able to shut down the run game. I mean, these are all hypotheticals, but what if, imagine the leverage that Zeke has all of a sudden, right? Because then Cowboys fans, who are really on Jerry Jones' side now, it's pretty amazing, and that's why he's played this out publicly. All of a sudden, that pressure comes on Jerry, and Dak Prescott all of a sudden has more pressure on him. So it's an incredibly high-stakes game of poker, and I love it in our business, watching it play out, because it is fascinating. But again, I don't think Jerry's willing to take that risk, just in case they happen to lose one of those first three games, because then that narrative shifts really, really fast.
It's amazing, though. Like, Le'Veon Bell's the only guy to sit out, first guy to sit out in like a decade. He lost a year's salary. He didn't get as much as he thought he'd get in the open market. The GM who signed him got fired after signing him to the contract.
Yep.
Right? Like, I'm not misremembering any of this stuff. And Le'Veon Bell was actually a free agent, whereas Zeke is not. He is not close to a free agent. And
it's
yet,
crazy.
I mean, it really is crazy. Like, I'm Jerry Jones. I'm like, dude, I'm done. You don't show up?
Right.
Fine. But the other question.
You didn't even mention either Todd Gurley.
Yes.
One of that before Le'Veon, he set the bar, and it's been it's been pretty much a disaster.
Yes,
as far as
bad contract.
Gurley disappeared. Yeah. So, I mean, it is, man. The running backs are getting screwed. That's where I do feel bad for them. It's, you know, you look at them, they're the second or third lowest paid by position. And it's only they're getting paid more than long snappers and like fullbacks. You know, like, it's insane how underpaid they are. And they do a lot of the work. It's just today's systems and the perception of running backs is that you can replace them easily. And there is some truth in that. But they really need to do something in the next collective bargaining agreement. The running backs need to step up to the table and say, hey, we are the position that's getting screwed, you know, especially if you're a first-round pick. We are under contract. We don't have much leverage so that you don't have these situations playing out like Melvin Gordon, who probably is going to miss playing time and doesn't have much leverage either.
Yeah, but I'm going to disagree with you here in terms of what they're worth. I mean, the problem is that C.J. Anderson came off the couch and was a better player, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and like Zeke can, what Zeke makes this year, like he made $16 million in his first year because of where he was drafted. Like, we do a little disingenuous with what guys make per year. You know, there's still average salary there still. And look, part of it is the rules as well. Because there's no rules that have changed in between the tackles, all the rules help the wide receivers. All the rules help the quarterbacks and maybe even the tight ends more than they help.
Doug, here's where I would push back just a little bit. When you hear fans, and I'm sure you get a lot of people chime in on Twitter, on your show, call in, fans are all, and I've heard a lot of this myself, fans are like, hey, he's being greedy. You know, he's got 2 years left on his contract. He should play. What do you think would have happened if the Cowboys draft him in the first round, comes in, he's overweight, he does okay his rookie year, his second year comes back overweight, rushes for 400 yards, didn't even start, and what do you think the Cowboys are going to do?
Well, it's a guaranteed contract.
You think
contract.
They're going to pay him these? Yeah, they're going to cut him.
No, but it's a guarantee. No, hold on, Danny. These are guaranteed contracts. The rookie contracts are on first-round picks are 100% guaranteed.
So in the bigger picture, though, anybody else's contract, rookie, so regardless, any contract.
But, like, look, you come in overweight and I'm supposed to keep paying you? Like, that doesn't make, right? Like,
right.
I actually think the NFL gets it more right than anybody else. Plus, it's a sport where you're literally one hit away, one move away from not just being out for a year, but for your career dramatically changing, unlike other sports. Like, we're.
So, agreed. And see, here's why the NFL has the best product because the players do have to perform.
Correct.
They do have to earn their money.
Correct.
Now, is that fair? I don't like it. I was left out of a lot of money because I got cut and didn't perform. But, hey, those were the breaks. Like, that's the way it was negotiated. And how many times have we seen in the NBA guys get paid and they kind of coast for a couple years and then their deal's up and they turn it on again? Same thing in baseball. We've seen $200 million contracts handed out and guys kind of disappeared. They fizzled out. It is why the NFL is the best product. As a former player, I hate it, but I do see it's the genius of the owners saying, they have to perform for us or we're getting rid of them, you know? And that's where I do understand guys trying to maximize when they do feel they have leverage. And Zeke feels like he has leverage because if they don't, and maybe he's willing to take it to the hilt like Le'Veon did, say, I'll sit out a year, I'll sit out, however long I have to sit out, you guys are going to eventually come back crawling to me. I don't think he wants to go there, and I don't think the Cowboys do either, though.
I don't think they do, but I mean, think of the precedent it sets if they relent for a guy under contract, what that does for the rest of their locker room. Last thing, you are a Florida...
Oh, real quick, can I follow up on that? Because I do think a lot... We've seen Melvin Gordon, we've seen Le'Veon last year, we saw Zeke this year, we did see Michael Thomas hold out, he got paid. I do think NFL players are jealous of NBA players.
No question.
I think they are delusional also in thinking they can pull a Kawhi Leonard. They can you know, force their way out of situations. They're watching the national landscape in professional sports, but I do think they're misled and delusional when they try to do that. But some of them are getting it to done, so you're like, all right, maybe this is the start of a shift of the way football does business.
DK, last thing, you're a Florida guy. You got Miami. I know you're a Florida State guy, but you're a state of Florida guy.
Yep.
Miami, new coach, taking on the Gators, first weekend of the season. I feel like this is a massive mismatch. Just a massive mismatch, you know? I mean, Mark Richt, whether he retired or got blown out of there, you know, Manny Diaz hasn't had enough time to really get after it in recruiting and replenish. They very much in transition. And as much as Dan Mullins hasn't been there a long time, he was already in the SEC, already recruiting that area. It was a better run program that he took over. I feel like this is a mismatch this weekend. Tell me I'm wrong.
I think you're wrong if Jaren Williams, who Manny Diaz named as the starter, plays steady. Now, that's a big ask for a redshirt freshman, really his biggest start in his career, going against an SEC defense in Florida. But I do think Miami defensively has maybe one of the best linebacking cores in the country. They got DJ Dallas in the backfield, a pretty good running back. They do have some talent, and I also think Florida's a little bit overhyped. Now, Florida has an incredible quarterback, Felipe Franks, physically. He's 6'5", 235 pounds. He can sling it. He can run it.
Who knows who he's going to sling it to, though?
Right, and mentally, he's a little bit fragile when he faces adversity. If Miami can keep it close, that pressure mounts on Florida throughout the game. I do think it'll be ugly. I'm with you. I think Florida wins, but I think it'll be closer than you think. I don't think it's a blowout.
Great stuff, DK. Danny Cannell, check him out on CBSSports.com. And, of course, his show is called Off the Bench. Don't forget to check out their online sports memorabilia auction with the proceeds benefiting St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. DK, thanks so much.
You got it, Doug. Have a good one.